There's a bipartisan deal to extend the tax cuts. What will that mean for the economic recovery?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. President Obama has reached a deal with Republicans to extend the Bush tax cuts that were set to expire this month. If the deal survives its trip through Congress, the cuts will be extended for all income levels for 2 years. In exchange, the president will get some of what he wanted, an extension of unemployment benefits for 13 months and a one-year cut in the amount of taxes workers pay into the Social Security Fund. For more on all this, let's bring in Diane Lim Rogers. She's chief economist at the Concord Coalition, and she joins us now live. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So let's start with what this means for individuals. What do you think?
Well, it means all American individuals are going to see pretty substantial tax cuts in the coming year. They get some continuation of the Bush tax cuts. They get a payroll tax holiday of 2% of their income. And those who are unemployed will continue to receive unemployment benefits. So a lot of tax cuts and a lot of help will be coming from the federal government.
A lot of tax cuts for individuals. Some are already calling this a second stimulus package. What does it mean for our economy?
It is another boost of stimulus. I've seen an estimate that the package is going to cost about $700 billion a year. We seem to like that figure. Our stimulus has been that size before, so it is like a second round of stimulus. I think it would have been better if we had swapped some of the elements of the Bush tax cuts that were less effective for these new elements that are more effective, but it is going to be a helpful boost to the economy, certainly in the short term.
And it's obviously going to mean a lot less revenue coming into the federal government. Quickly, Diane, what does it mean for the deficit?
Well, it means we're obviously adding hundreds of billions of dollars more in debt. We've deficit financed this package, or that's the plan. And so we're going to need to, in the next couple of years, before this round of the Bush tax cuts expire, we're going to need to find more fundamental tax reform to replace the current system, and we're going to need to find a way to raise more revenue.
All right. Diane Lim Rogers, chief economist at the Concord Coalition. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, Consumer Reports has an article out today about how to know if it's time to take the car keys away from an elderly parent. It comes as many states are rethinking the ways they test elderly drivers at the DMV. Marketplace's Gregory Warner looks at whether more restrictions could affect the economy.
Most elderly drivers tend to use their cars for errands like grocery shopping, but making it harder for senior citizens to get licenses may not mean fewer shoppers at the drugstore.
By the time you take somebody's license away from them, they've been out spending money every day.
Sandy Rosenblum is a professor at the University of Arizona and an expert on the transportation impacts of an aging society. She says the image of Mr. Magoo driving to the store, clearing out sidewalks along the way, is a myth.
You get to be an unsafe driver not because you're old. You get to be an unsafe driver because you're sick.
For the thousands of Americans who lose their licenses each year, the biggest economic impact might be on their adult children, especially daughters and daughters-in-law who have to become the taxi of last resort. Anne McCart is with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
Many older people don't live where they have access to other means of transportation.
That's why taking away someone's license, she says, is often the step right before nursing home. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Markets are up between 1% and 2% across Europe right now as officials there insist they have enough money in their bailout fund for now. Here in the U.S., orange juice futures have jumped about 5% because of cold temperatures in the forecast for Florida. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 20 points to close at 11,362.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation Defender, helping doctors, lawyers, and small business owners monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. ReputationDefender.com. By Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at Vanguard.com/public radio. And by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud.
What's in an area code? Those three digits can say a lot, actually. Where you are, how long you've been there, if it's a landline or a wireless number. Here in New York City, we have 5 different area codes, and we're about to get a 6th. Come April, new numbers will be assigned area code 929. Marketplace's Elisa Roth gives us the 411.
There are about 40 million possible phone numbers in the New York City area, and they're starting to run out. It's not that New York's population is growing so fast. There's just more demand for phone numbers. John Manning works for Neustar, which is the company hired by the government to assign area codes.
Years ago, we used to say, well, everybody was getting a second line and they were getting fax numbers. And now it seems like everybody in the family has a wireless telephone number.
The U.S. phone system is based on 7 digits. So the only way to add numbers is to keep adding area codes. Manning says that costs money all around. Phone companies have to reprogram their switches, and it can cost businesses too.
Changing stationery, signage, and things like that, just getting acclimated.
There's an unofficial hierarchy to the current area codes. In New York, 212 is at the top. Newer ones like 347 and 646 are at the bottom. Roger Entner is a telecom analyst at the Nielsen Company. He says the value of an area code may all be in your head, but it does say something.
212, it means you've been in New York a long time, especially if you have a 212 cell phone number, because everybody else has 917.
And individuals aren't the only ones who care. Las Vegas tried, unsuccessfully, to win the lucky area code 777. In Florida, the county around Cape Canaveral did manage to get the area code 321. In area code 212, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, to the 617 area code up in Massachusetts. For the first time since 1650, the governing board at Harvard University is getting a big makeover. Following a 27% drop in the Harvard endowment last year, the school's president says it's time for a change. The board will no longer offer lifetime appointments. Members will now serve just 6-year terms. It makes sense, one Harvard professor quipped, because a lifetime appointment in 1650 was a lot less than it is today. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
A new startup connects busy professionals with nonprofits that need their experience.
I wanted to have an opportunity to volunteer what I was building every day, which were my financial skills.
I'm Bob Moon. That story and charities in the social media age kick off our annual philanthropy series next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.